From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The news from Tehran and the United Nations today is that Iran has stopped its most sensitive uranium enrichment work. It's part of a deal with world powers to ease worry about the country's nuclear program. It also clears the way for a partial lifting of sanctions. The EU eased some a few moments ago. The BBC's Matthew Price is following this from London. Matthew, good morning.
Morning, David.
So the process formally begins today, this deal between Iran and Western powers. But for Iran, it's supposed to lead to lifting of some economic sanctions. Give me a sense of how that would work.
In essence, these sanctions have crippled the Iranian economy. And what today's movements will mean is that if Iran has lived up to its side of the bargain, then Iran will get access, first of all, to several billion in US dollars worth of payments for oil sales to China and India and Japan, which has all been locked up in foreign banks under these sanctions up until now. It's going to be allowed once again to trade in petrochemicals, but more importantly also, allowing it in this carefully choreographed move to trust the West a little bit more so that it will enter into a second phase of talks.
Speaking of that second phase, as this interim system plays out, the idea is for new negotiations about what? A more permanent agreement regarding the nuclear program?
Exactly that. They are looking at bringing an end to this decade and a half running problem of the Iranian nuclear question, to once and for all verify that Iran is not enriching for military purposes. If you think about the animosity between most Western powers and Iran, then today is a major step forward in terms of trust building.
The BBC's Matthew Price in London. Matthew, thank you.
Thanks, David.
The private equity firms KKR and Affinity Equity are selling one of South Korea's major beer companies to the Anheuser-Busch InBev conglomerate. The maker of Oriental Brewery, OB, will go for $5.8 billion. Dr. King pushed for a political revolution, but also for the economic betterment of those on the lower rungs of the income ladder. Part of the civil rights movement's legacy has been upward mobility for many African Americans and higher pay scales for some. But what has not changed dramatically is high levels of unemployment for black people, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
African Americans have been getting back to work like everyone else, slowly. But one thing hasn't changed much over several decades.
The black unemployment rate is typically twice that of the white unemployment rate in good times and even in bad times.
Economist William Rogers at Rutgers University points out it was that way in the late 1960s when about 7% of blacks were unemployed. And it's true today with the rate around 12%. Margaret Sims at the Urban Institute says the uneven jobs recovery poses challenges.
African Americans tend to be geographically concentrated in communities where jobs are not growing as fast, and in some cases there are very few jobs available.
Sims says African Americans are also heavily represented in the public sector as bus drivers and caseworkers. Those jobs have been cut hard. William Rogers says many young African Americans lack good job networks, friends and family who can connect them to employment. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Interested in working for Uncle Sam? Well, government jobs, once seen as stable with decent pay and good benefits, now seem a lot less so. There's the anti-government rhetoric, hiring freezes, and let's not forget the shutdown. If working for the government has lost luster, what does that mean for young people considering a career in public service? Marketplace's David Gura reports.
Norm Orenstein is a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and he gave a speech to a group of presidential management fellows, young men and women, he says, who are among the government's best and brightest.
And when we got to the Q&A, it was all about, am I crazy? What am I doing here? Can I count on this as a reasonable and productive career?
Questions that aren't unreasonable on the heels of a government shutdown. Ann Porter, a law student at George Washington University, notes federal salaries had been frozen.
I'm not applying for a government job because they don't pay as well as private sector positions do.
Her classmate, Austin Walsh, says a lot is up in the air.
It's certainly not a sure shot whether you're going to get hired or whether you're going to get a raise or be able to advance if you are hired, which is scary.
Maggie New deals with that anxiety directly every day. She's in career services at GW's Elliott School of International Affairs. Her office looks out on the Federal Reserve and the State Department.
I can't quite see who's coming and going, but almost. I can see the motorcades, definitely.
We are really just a stone's throw away from places where students here probably would like to work.
Oh, absolutely.
But getting those jobs has gotten tougher. We take a walk in the park between her building and the State Department.
We've heard that the State Department, you have to have two people leave or retire or resign for one person to be hired.
Mary Bouillot's heard about that hiring freeze, too. She's the head of career services at the Harvard Kennedy School.
When you get a sequester situation or a shutdown situation where people's budgets are cut, what it means is that they can't do any hiring.
The students Bouillot works with want to make a difference, she says.
And certainly when the government's shut down or opportunities are more limited because budgets are cut in a sequester situation, it's frustrating for them.
Bouillot says she finds herself telling Kennedy School students this: you can tackle big problems in the public sector, but also in the private sector and at nonprofits. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And during the Great Recession, public universities tended to cut, cut, and cut. Now there's word that as the economy seems to recover, spending at public colleges and universities is turning around. A new calculation by Illinois State's Center for the Study of Education Policy finds higher ed spending up in 40 states, but it's not back to pre-recession levels. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.